Hi, this is Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Welcome to Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I am joined today by Jason Lunde, who's Vice President of Product Development and Advisory Services at Centrio. Jason, how are you today?
I'm great, Adam. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, good to have you. So today we're going to talk about working with leadership. Let me dive right in. Obviously, with leadership, it's hard to get time with them. What's your recommendation for how you make the most out of the time that you have for training?
Well, you know, I think leadership is a unique situation when we think about what kind of leadership training you want to do throughout the hierarchy of the organization. The first thing I think we need to remember in ethics and compliance is that we really need to develop a skill set on our own of being marketers. We have to market the program, and one aspect of that is marketing this training so that leaders see that it's something of value, that they really understand this is something that's going to make a difference for them. And so the first thing is really communicating both before the training and during the training the value that they're going to get from it. And there are many ways of doing that. We can talk about research studies or case studies or just references internally of people who've gone through the training and found it successful. The second side of that, again, which is needs to start beforehand and continue into the training, is showing them the pain of not taking it, that if they don't develop these competencies as a leader, that it's going to hurt them and it's going to hurt the organization. And again, various research studies and case studies address this and ad infinitum in terms of what are the things that you don't want to happen by not having those skills. So those are two important aspects, I think. In addition, I think you also want to thinking about making sure that you connect the training to what the leader's duties are. And one recent phenomenon we've seen with corporate codes of conduct is a lot more clarity regarding what expectations leaders have in managing to ethics and compliance. And you see this up front in a code. There's usually a list of 5 or 6 or 7 responsibilities. And so you can take that and really utilize it and leverage it to help leaders understand this is what's expected of you. So these are the skills you need to develop. Otherwise, it's going to hurt you. And it's going to hurt you in a performance review, and it's going to hurt you in the quality of what gets done within your organization. So these are, I think, all important issues of really connecting with leaders and helping them understand the value of the training so that they're willing to take the time to do it.
Yeah, I like it. It's sort of a witch's brew of inspiration, fear, relevance, and corporate expectations. What do leaders, do you think, need to focus on rather than middle managers and rank and file employees?
When we think about the leadership hierarchy in an organization, it's fascinating because the people who are at the lower levels, the supervisors, are dealing with different issues than people at the very top. And it's really a bit of a sliding scale where as you move up the hierarchy, you take on new roles. And so I think we need to segregate sometimes leadership in those different groups so that we train people in the supervisory roles near the bottom differently than people in middle management versus people in the hierarchy, and need to really adjust the training for those different types of roles. And of course, the further you get up the hierarchy into senior management, the issues are strategic. And so you need to think about ethics and compliance with respect to strategic business decisions that they're facing, because that's a whole set of competencies that's different from an operational frontline manager. In addition to that, though, I think probably the most important thing about getting leadership to focus on in training is the idea of influence, the role that they have. Jeff Kaplan has written regularly about this in his blog. I was just reading a draft article by Laurie Tanzi yesterday on the role of influence with respect to a speak-up culture. And so leaders really need to understand that they are influencing their direct reports. And what are the tools, the resources, the challenges in wielding that influence in an appropriate way? As you move up the hierarchy, though, you start having leaders who start having to influence management chains. So it's not just their direct reports. They have to influence their direct reports and their direct reports' direct reports further down the line in a way that they don't always see. And so it's really influencing these management change and management systems that they really have to focus on. And then finally, I think there's this very interesting issue of power dynamics. And Scott Killingsworth has written a bit about this, which is fascinating, that the further you move up into a hierarchy and leadership, the more you have power, and the more that power has an effect on the individual. And leaders really need to understand that. A lot of times they don't. And they make mistakes because they don't know the psychological impact of what a power situation does and how they need to learn how to manage that and control it in an appropriate way. And then the second part of that is how you wield power over others. George Stephanopoulos, when he was at the White House, said, at a certain level in government, it's not about what's right or wrong. It's about what you can get done or not get done. And while I don't fully buy that, I think he brings up a very good point. It has a lot to do with what you can influence other people into believing. And so wielding power over others becomes a very important aspect of senior leadership, and how you do that in an appropriate way, and you have how you have a really strong rationale for what you really want to get done.
It's interesting. A lot of it is like parenting. It's not just what you do, it's but how you get others to do things, and also realizing that you're always going to be a model for your employees, just as like for parents, you're a model for kids. So let me get into a practical question for you. So what kind of training do you think tends to work best? I mean, is it something like online, like we tend to see across the workforce, in person? Is it really dependent on what you're trying to train people in?
Adam, you bring up a very interesting and a question that has gotten a lot of debate in recent years. And I just recently read a study by Will Talheimer that talks about this very issue. And doing a meta-analysis of all these different research reports on this specific issue, his conclusion is the delivery mechanism doesn't matter as much as the content or the method of what you're trying to train to. So whether it's online or it's in person, the study concluded that blended learning probably works the best, both a mix of online and in person. But ultimately, it comes down to what are you trying to train to and what method are you using in that training? And by method, I mean, is it something interactive? Is it something role-based? Is it role-playing? I think the best training, whether it's online or in person or a blend, is training that really engages the learner so they feel there's value for it in me, and I'm going to get something out of it, and I'm part of the training. I'm not just sitting back and observing. I'm participating in the training. Training that really challenges perspectives. I think this is one of the great things that people can learn, whether you're a leader or in a non-management position, is starting to rethink your attitude and your perspective toward business, toward success, toward working with others. And as people start to change that perspective, they become more appreciative and more willing to accept the learning that they're getting and finding ways to take that and to really build a skill set out of that. In addition, I think training really needs to motivate the individual to want to learn more about the subject. So it's more of a, instead of it's a push thing to them, it's them pulling the training to you. It's the leadership saying, hey, this is really valuable. How do we get more out of this? We've got these other challenges that we need to have a better skill set and how to address. And so in that line, things that relate more to their daily work and what they do on a daily basis and the type of job that they have really makes a difference. And I think a final part of that is we tend to find we learn more and we appreciate what we learn when the training or the education probes below the surface into things like the root causes of problems or the motivations that influence people to do certain types of things. So it becomes the why, not just the how of how we get things done, but the why of why people respond or act certain ways. And all of that wrapped together makes for very stimulating training. And I think training that people step back and say, this was not only really valuable, if I hadn't had this, I would be in a much weakened position in terms of doing my job.
Interesting, because you know, some of the way you say goes back to your first point about trying to inspire them, not just for what they do, but to think about what else they should be thinking about. So we talked about how to do it right. What are things you can do to make things go totally wrong?
Yes, and I think people slip into this inadvertently at times, because I think most companies have the best of intentions, or good intentions at least, when they start to put together training, and especially training for leaders. But oftentimes there are budget pressures and there are time pressures and there's a question of what resources we have. And so what sometimes tends to happen is they put together training that's kind of rote and it's generic and it's not very stimulating. It may be a presentation by one of the departments about what the rules are and what the code says, but it really isn't training, it's kind of reading, or it's education that they could get out of a book or reading the code of conduct. But I think the difference is training needs to be much more stimulating, more interactive to really be training. Otherwise, just hand them a book and let them read that. Training that really doesn't respect what we've learned about adult learning is a real problem too. When we get to the point when we're working in the business world, we have a set of knowledge and a set of skills. And I think adult learners are really turned off when training is not engaging It's not appreciating their life experiences and what their skills already are, and it doesn't take that into account. And so the training doesn't become something that's immediately useful or useful to them over time. It's just information that's being passed on to them. And so I think we really need to be understanding adult learning theory and how that really should apply to the training. And then finally, I think it really is an area, training, when we think about leadership training, is an area where we really need to make that investment early on. Because I think personally, gauging leadership and enabling leadership in the right way is probably the most influential thing that we can do in managing for ethics and compliance. And so if we're not engaging them and not enabling them to understand what their responsibilities are and how to exercise those responsibilities, the ethics and compliance program is not set up for success.
Well, it's definitely a challenge if they're feeling disengaged, because a lot of part of their job, you know, as you talked to earlier, is about influencing others. And that leads to my final question is, how do you best earn the support of leadership for training the rest of the workforce? Not only giving, you know, permission for the compliance team to do it, but communicating to the workforce that they think this is a value and something that should be done.
That's a very important question, I think, for leadership, because if leadership is not engaged and not reinforcing the value of ethics and compliance training, then likely nothing else matters. It really is incumbent on ethics and compliance staff to engage leadership so that they serve really as your spokespeople in getting excitement around the program. And that really the best way to do that is to first put leadership through training that's really engaging and interactive and valuable, so that when they come out of that, they're not only saying, what do I need to do to get my employees to take this training, but they're asking for it. How quickly can we get this training out to our employees? It's the difference between pushing it and getting them to pull it to you. And I've seen this in leadership workshops where leaders, senior leaders, will come out and they'll say, this was really valuable to me. This was really engaging. It's not what I expected it to be. And it went beyond my expectations. How quickly can I get my employees involved in this? And that's probably the best thing that you can do, that really is that idea of the power of reference that leadership really finds is valuable. And I've seen this in past organizations where the CEO is the first to take the code of conduct training and the tone that sets within the organization. And so that's the most important thing I think you need to do. And really, in that sense, engaging leadership is the most important thing you can do. Everything that you do in an ethics and compliance program really won't matter if leadership is not only supportive of it, but is encouraging employees across the board that this is important to what you do in this organization, and it's important to our organization's success.
Thanks. Great advice. Thank you so much for your time. Thank all of you for listening. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics, and this has been Compliance Perspectives.